Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I am Zach.
And we are back with another episode of the Dune Minute Podcast. It is Wednesday, my dudes.
It's Wednesday, moi deebs.
Fair enough. We left off yesterday with just some crazy amount of indiscriminate gunfire coming out of that ornithopter, that pesky ornithopter that's just flying over this harvester. Unfortunately, we're starting today off with more of that.
Yeah, we are talking about minute 37 through 38. This minute starts and ends with running, sometimes from Harkonnen bullets, sometimes towards them with reckless abandon. Just yet more gunfire from the ornithopter into this group.
We're killing friend and foe alike.
Yeah, they do not care.
Yeah.
So we see a number of Fremen and Harkonnen soldiers get taken out. This gun is really interesting in the way that it fires.
So with like the recoil system and everything.
Yeah. I want to take a couple minutes right here at the top to talk about this gun. Longtime listeners of the show will know that you and I both are gun, not fanatics by any stretch, but just fans. Respectful. We're not nuts about them, but you know, enjoy them.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not fucking, you know, meal team six over here.
No, absolutely not. So we get a very quick shot of the muzzle of this gun as it's doing its bursts. Mm-hmm. And it has a really cool recoil system to where the end of the barrel like retracts into the gun.
It's almost like an internal spring recoil system or whatever.
Yeah. And yeah,
I know that is also a thing that is rooted in reality.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You see that a lot, especially on like AC-130s and stuff, because yeah. Otherwise you're just going to fucking blow that plane
way
the fuck all over the sky, which, I mean, you're doing that anyways because of just the amount of force that like some of those cannons are putting out and everything. But an ornithopter is a bit lighter weight than an AC-130 is, so.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. So we get, it's a very quick shot, but we get to see at least three distinct muzzle bursts.
Yep.
From this. Now, I busted out my handy metronome with my tap tempo function.
Sure.
And I watched the sequence about six times.
Yep.
And of course I'm not wholly accurate, but it went from the range of like 230 beats per minute to like 280 beats per minute.
That's a bit of a range.
I know, because I'm not perfect.
Okay.
So we'll split it down the middle, 250 beats per minute. It's not exactly the middle, but call it on average.
255.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
So 250 beats per minute. Now, the next shot, I'll say bursts per minute. So we get back down on the ground, we get to see the effects of this rifle's burst by little puffs of sand on the ground.
Yeah. And now,
I could not count all of them.
It seemed to be inconsistent.
It does, yeah.
Yeah.
I had to estimate around 50 at a time, though.
Puffs?
Yeah, 50 little puffs per burst. And yeah. I felt comfortable with that number.
Okay.
So if that is correct, so we have a burst per minute and we have a, let's just call it 50. So if we have a 200, if we can agree on 250 bursts per minute, around 50 projectiles per burst. That's about 12,500 rounds per minute out of this gun.
Yeah.
That's insane.
A lot.
Yeah. Some current production, some real life guns right now. The fastest one that we have, fastest production gun, is the M134 minigun. It's 6,000 rounds per minute. And there is a proof of concept gun called the Metal Storm. that they say can shoot 1 million rounds per minute.
The fuck?
9 millimeter rounds per minute. Which is fucking insane.
Holy shit. Have you ever seen those guns that are on? They're mini guns, but there's like arrays of four of them. They're normally on like naval vessels or whatever, and they can just fucking like track anything and just shoot a shitload.
I forget what the name of them are, but they look like little pill capsules.
Yeah.
On the boats. Yeah, automatic tracking systems, and it just sounds like that's what it sounds like. Yeah, those are crazy.
Yeah. Your tax dollars hard at work.
Yep. It's also fun to see the videos where they do like the what this costs.
Oh,
like the operating cost things, and then when they show the guns like that, it's like, you know, just $0. Just to get it to aim is like, you know, $10, $10, $20, and then it fires $4,000 or a lot more.
Try $400,000. Yeah. It's fucking yeah.
Oh god.
So you know, but we could have roads and stuff.
Yeah, well, America. So this gun is just chewing through Fremen and Harkonnen alike. The Fremen make the smart decision to get the fuck out of there.
Yep.
And how they all, or how any of them made it underneath the harvester is a miracle.
But they do crawl into the space between the treads
space of this harvester. Between where your wicked lies. So you'll find me waiting if I get to go.
Well, they're lucky that no one in the harvester pulled a Dave Matthews and just opened the shit container directly on top of them.
I feel like we've had this exact conversation in the past week or so.
I feel like we had the Dave Matthews shit incident reference on the podcast.
We did. We did. I think it was like a week or two ago.
Never forget.
Because you said the space between, and I started singing that song, and then you brought up.
All right, cool.
Oh, well.
Time is a circle.
Time is a flat circle. So they're underneath the harvester. They're moving along with the tracks.
They're army crawling fast.
Yes.
Which I don't know if you've ever tried to army crawl before.
Not in a very long time.
Yeah, but I'm sure you've done it.
Sure.
When you were a kid or whatever, like to do it obstacle that fast. God damn.
Yeah. It is very, very hard.
Especially in sand.
Yeah. That's crazy. The little pokey things are getting mighty close to them.
They're getting a little too close for comfort.
Yeah. But, thankfully the movie moves along and, they make it to the other side.
They plot armor their way to success.
Yes.
Because this is a PG-13 movie.
Yeah, that would be nuts if one of them got caught underneath those pokey things. That would be crazy.
Yeah.
So they emerge from the other side, and part of the group runs off to the right. Part of the group runs off to the left to intercept some more goons that we see coming beside the harvester.
Well, you miss a very important thing. One of the Fedaiken and Chani, according to the subtitles, speak to each other in Chakobsa, not translated.
Did I miss this?
Yeah.
What the fuck? What's wrong with me?
I don't know, dude. You're missing shit all over the place today. It was mostly just yells, so.
Okay. Okay, so they yell at each other. They exit.
Yep.
Harvester left.
Stage har. Yeah.
And some of them go to intercept.
With Snagglepuss and all this.
Some of them go to intercept some goons, and Chaul run to take cover behind one of the spider legs structures. And this is where we get a fucking cool gun.
Oh, I love this launcher so much.
Johnny pulls out this bazooka style weapon.
It screams 80s bazooka.
Oh yeah, like, absolutely.
So perfectly.
And this goon, here's another theme that we're going to see here, or at least for the next like minute and a half.
Goons just appearing?
Goons appearing, but also goons with no haste. They are just casually walking.
They're encumbered.
Yeah, I guess, man, but we do not see them run at all. And that's a very stark contrast to Paul, who we see run a lot.
There's a wonderful thing called plot armor, Zach.
I guess, man, but... Yeah, maybe their suits do not allow them to run, really.
Well, Art and Soul says that they are very limited in their mobility. So yeah.
Okay, maybe that's it.
There is your canon justification.
Fair enough. So a goon approaches Chani from behind while she's working to, you know, get the gun ready. Paul sees him, takes him out, no problem.
Yep.
Chani gets the gun ready and shouts to Paul to load the weapon, and she like just props it up on her shoulder. Again, bazooka style.
Yeah. However, this one, instead of being backloaded, is side-loaded with this really cool like latch door thing that just like slides into the gun.
Yeah.
Just thought it was really cool. The charge is pretty small. It can fit in one of Paul's hands, and he just slips it in the gun. Shuts the side door, and I don't know if you'd notice, but the back of the gun has a mechanical motion where, like, vent opens up and it.
Yeah, I saw that. Very cool.
We love a practical effect.
Yep. We come to find out that's for exhaust for this projectile. It is a rocket propelled projectile. So this is basically a shoulder mounted RPG that she's got on.
Yep.
And she takes aim, and we see two goons sort of casually walking over to them at this point.
From the other harvester leg.
Right.
So they're nowhere near. They're about, if I had to guess, I would say 15 to 20 meters or so.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Chani doesn't see them because she's too busy with the gun. Paul does, though. And he makes a mad dash towards them. Very like Tom Cruise style sprinting.
Yeah. That very like not
movie
perfectly
running.
Organic running, but
no, I would go the other direction. This is organic running. This is him doing a full out sprint, and they have the space to do it. You don't really see that a lot in movies because they're doing it on like stages and sound sets and like stuff like that.
They're on treadmills or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. But he's doing a Tom Cruise style run because Tom Cruise is famous for doing the, like just a full out sprint in his movies. And it looks weird to us because we don't ever see that.
Fair. Fair. He's also doing it in sand too. So maybe that's also why it looks a little not entirely natural.
Right, right, right. The minute ends mid sprint here.
Yeah.
So we're not going to get to see what he does when he intercepts them right now. We will get to see it tomorrow.
But at least we're not cut off mid-sentence. So no. I'll take a mid-sprint instead of a mid-sentence cutoff.
Right, exactly. Anything else from Art and Soul for this one before we get into what will be two long minutes to end out this week?
Oh, yeah. So, as I teased yesterday, it should be obvious now, Shadow Lot is due to all the shadows from the practical effects of the legs, but there were also shadows being cast by these giant 20-square-foot screens that were being held up by, according to Art and Soul, 24 telescopic forklifts, which is just the scissor forklift that we all know and love.
Okay.
The reason why they did this was because they wanted to project actual shadows onto the ground to help the CG teams make the harvester as realistic looking as possible. Because if you have more done in practical effects, it helps the generated effects look more realistic.
Sure. That makes sense.
The legs in this sequence and in the rest of the minutes were referred to by the crew as Gerd's legs, named after SFX supervisor Gerd Nefzer and his team, who worked to engineer, test, and operate the legs. Each are 60 foot by 30 foot and had to be operated by construction excavators. The bottom half that we see the characters leaning up against and interacting with are entirely practical.
Nice.
They were the exterior shells and like surface hard surfaces were all built in Budapest. Also shipped down.
Man, God, so much work.
I wonder what the shipping costs on these like custom things is. Seriously. It's got to be insane.
I mean, it pays off. Obviously, it was worth it because it looks fucking good.
Yeah. But like when you're dealing with movie budgets, just like what the fuck? But yeah, the bottom half that we see characters leaning up against and interacting with is all practical set design, while the upper portions and the rest of the harvester are all obviously CG. Art and Soul talks in depth about the necessity for making sure practical shadows were properly shot, as I said, to make CG, you know, super convincing and everything. They ultimately had some like people, you know, construction folks that operate these machines regularly to make sure that everything is done super accurately, because these legs are not light.
Oh, and sure.
You got to make sure that you're not crushing people by accident or whatever. Art and Soul talks a lot about how they would just dry run these scenes a couple dozen times just to make sure all of the blocking and all of the like timings and everything is exactly what it needs to be.
Yeah.
So that way there is no room for error.
Well, so it pays off.
They did a really good job.
Yeah.
And as far as Art and Soul notes, that is all that we have for these minutes.
Okay, cool.
Gonna have a little more for tomorrow. Other than that, I think we're done with Art and Soul's section for the week.
Okay, cool. So, well, let's reconvene tomorrow where we start talking about minutes 38 through 39. And if you'd like to get in touch with us in the meantime, we are on bluesky@duneminute.com. We have a Gmail account, and that is duneminute@gmail.com. Reach out if you want. I don't care. Do it. Or not. I mean, I would appreciate it, but, you know, whatever. That's fine. All right, cool. See you tomorrow.
All right. We'll see you later.